Ashes by Richfield. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. From Hollywood, we bring you the 165th edition of the 18th year of the Richfield Reporter, compiled from the entire worldwide facilities of the United Press. What's going on in the world?
Two major brush fires burned out of control tonight in Southern California, fanned by winds that ranged from 30 to 60 miles an hour. They were in widely separated localities. One was in the Santa Monica Mountains between San Fernando Valley and the Malibu Beach area. It started between Topanga and Santa Ynez Canyons on the south side of Mulholland Drive. And the last word from hard-pressed firefighters, too busy combating the flames to make frequent reports, was that the fire had burned numerous small cabins and several square miles of brush. There were reports that some homes had burned, but these have not been confirmed by United Press. Hundreds of residences were threatened if the flames veered northward toward the Malibu section. Several hundred volunteers were fighting the flames under the direction of Los Angeles City and County firemen with nearly two dozen units of firefighting equipment. The other fire was about 40 miles south of Los Angeles in Santa Ana Canyon on the Orange and Riverside County line. That blaze swept over 6 square miles of brush and was headed toward Silverado Canyon, a thickly settled area. Nearly 1,000 men, 50 of them, Marines from El Toro Marine Air Base. The Santa Ana Canyon fire burned 5 cabins within a few hours after it started and threatened dozens of others. Residents of Southern California, anxious over the welfare of friends living in the two fire zones, may be assured that if further news and details are received while the reporter's on the air, we'll give them to you immediately. On the world scene today, the General Assembly of the United Nations adopted the American plan for control of atomic energy in Paris tonight by a vote of 40-6 over the objection of Russia. Soviet delegate Vyshinsky made a personal attack on President Truman in his last futile speech against the plan. But it was approved by the Assembly of 58 nations after voting down Russia's counterplan for control by the same margin. Because of Russia's opposition, the plan is merely a gesture and cannot be enforced. Just the same, it gives virtual world endorsement to the U.S. plan, which was advanced in 1946 by Bernard Baruch. The Soviet plan called for destruction of atom bombs and, at the same time, the setting up of a system of atomic energy control still to be worked out. Thus, the United States would have been ordered to destroy its bombs without any guarantee that Russia would not use the opportunity to continue development of atomic weapons herself. Meanwhile, the UN Security Council adopted a resolution ordering Jewish and Arab troops to withdraw to the positions they held in the Negev region of southern Palestine before fighting began October 14th. The resolution, offered by Britain and China, was adopted by a vote of 9-1, with a negative vote being cast by the Soviet Ukraine. Russia abstained instead of voting against the proposal, as her no vote would have amounted to a formal veto. Tonight's news from Germany says a new major airport built in 13 weeks by German men and women who worked with shovels and brooms, even their bare hands, will be open tomorrow. It will challenge Russian hopes that winter will finally starve the Allies out of Berlin, says UP correspondent John B. McDermott. Number one political development of the day was the unanimous vote of the Berlin City Council to ask the Western Allies to outlaw the Russian-issued currency in their sectors of the city. In France, armed troops stood guard at every coal pit in the country as the government pledged itself to end the 32-day-old mine strike by next Monday. Minister of Industry and Commerce, Robert Lacoste, said the government will use every measure in its power to guarantee freedom of work so that normal production can be resumed. In Tokyo, the International Military Tribunal of the Far East placed the blame for starting Japan on the road to aggressive war on the shoulders of the Japanese army. In the second day of reading the judgment, being passed on 25 defendants, including former Premier Tojo, the judge's decision said the Japanese army was responsible for the tie-up with Hitler and Mussolini. It accused the army leaders of lying to Emperor Hirohito to win his approval of moves essential to their grand plot against the Allies. During the campaign, they called it the presidential train. Tonight, as it takes him back to Washington, victorious in an election, the expert said he couldn't win. The correspondents are calling it the victory special. As President Truman left Independence, Missouri, he told a trackside crowd of his neighbors there were going to be a lot of red faces in Washington. Just the same, there wasn't any gloating by the Missourian who sent the poll takers into a wrestling match with conscience-stricken adding machines. At Jefferson City, Missouri, Mr. Truman gave a brief thank you speech to a crowd of several thousand persons and laughingly read them a telegram from the Washington Post. It invited him to be guest of honor at a banquet to which the newspaper also would invite editorial writers, political reporters, pollsters, columnists, and radio commentators. The telegram suggested the president wear white tie and tails and eat turkey, while the other guests would wear sackcloth and eat crow. Indicating he would not accept the invitation, Mr. Truman said, "I've been in many and many an election campaign, as you people here in Missouri know. And after the election is over, I don't bear any malice or feel badly toward anyone. The fellow who lost feels badly enough without being crowed over. That's what I'm going to tell them." He was jovial and thankful for the vote of confidence he got in Tuesday's election. But the president never lost sight of the responsibility which his victory carries. At Sedalia, he told a trainside crowd, "I have myself now a great responsibility. I hope I can fill it to the satisfaction of the people of my home state. You must stand behind me." At St. Louis, he told a cheering crowd of 10,000 in Union Station that he has the biggest job in the world, but with your help, it can be done. He won final assurance tonight that the Average Man program, on which he defeated Governor Dewey, will be in the hands of the strongest Democratic Congress since the latter days of the New Deal. The man who inherited the presidency from the late Franklin D. Roosevelt almost 4 years ago takes office this time as a winner in his own right and undisputed leader of his party. He has an emphatic popular mandate that will have to be listened to by the Democratic members of the new Congress he led to victory. Virtually complete returns show that he will deal with a Congress more solidly Democratic than at any time since 1943. The new House will have at least 262 Democrats, 171 Republicans, one American laborite. This is a net gain of 73 seats. And the Democrats have a chance of picking up another in Colorado, where their candidate is leading the only House contest still undecided. The Democrats also won 9 more Senate posts than they held in the 80th Congress, giving them a clear-cut majority of 54 to 42. Mr. Truman's first job after a Florida vacation, which starts next week, will be to prepare for submission to his 81st Congress the legislative program the 80th refused him, and on which he made his campaign fight. It includes a number of controversial issues on which he may get a fight, even from some members of his own party. As he went up and down the land, he told the voters he wanted the Taft-Hartley law repealed, wanted a broad housing, continued rent controls, health, education, and social insurance program, a minimum wage of 75 cents an hour, and a civil rights program with the strength of federal law to back it up. Senator Ellender of Louisiana started the ball rolling toward making good on one of President Truman's major campaign promises, more low-cost housing for low-income families. On the heels of the Democratic sweep, Ellender said he will introduce legislation early in the next session of Congress to meet the urgent demand of the people for immediate enactment of an adequate public housing law. He said his bill will provide for an adequate program of low-rent public housing for low-income families, slum clearance, and farm housing. And so, the way was cleared for renewal of the fight over public housing, which a group of Republicans kept from passage over a period of 4 years. Well, buyers appeared in Wall Street again today, and the market began to regain what it lost in yesterday's after-election price break. However, caution was the order of the day, and extreme gains ranged to only 2+ fractions as compared to yesterday's losses of 5, 6, or 7 points. Commodity prices were higher because of the growing certainty that farm support will be continued, possibly strengthened. Representative J. Parnell Thomas, long in the headlines as chairman of the House Committee Investigating Un-American Activities, appeared before a federal grand jury in Washington, but stood on his constitutional rights and refused to testify. The grand jury is investigating charges that the New Jersey Republican padded his congressional payroll. Earlier, Thomas had insisted on a chance to testify. Today, he appeared at the scheduled hour of 10 a.m., but left less than 5 minutes later. His attorney said he persuaded Thomas not to testify because it would serve no useful purpose. UP correspondent Ruth Miner recalled that Thomas has clashed frequently with witnesses before his committee who refused to testify on constitutional grounds. Meanwhile, Assistant U.S. Attorney General Alex Campbell said the government had finished presenting its case, and it's now up to the grand jury to decide whether an indictment will be returned. Thomas was reelected last Tuesday, but will lose the chairmanship of the Un-American Activities Committee when the Democrats organize Congress in January. Meanwhile, President Truman forwarded to Congress a report warning that any American aid to China must be supervised closely by Americans on the spot if it is to be effective. The warning came at the end of a 37-page report on administration of a $350 million special relief program for China, Austria, Greece, Italy, and Trieste. 18 U.S. Air Force flyers were killed in the crash of their B-29 in the Azores less than 24 hours ago And fear was expressed tonight for the lives of some 34 other persons who were aboard three planes reported missing and believed down somewhere in the North Pacific. Two Navy planes, a four-engine PB-4Y-2 privateer and a P-2Y Neptune, and a DC-3 of Pacific Alaska Airlines were reported missing in the North Pacific. 11 persons were said to be aboard the airline's plane, which was overdue at Annette Island near Ketchikan on a flight from Sitka. The plane normally carries a crew of two. The Navy privateer was lost in the Bristol Bay area in western Alaska. The Navy said it carried a normal crew of 12. The Neptune plane, a long-range patrol bomber which the Navy said carried between 7 and 9 crew members, had not been heard from since 7 o'clock this morning. The B-29, which crashed in the Azores, was returning to MacDill Air Force Base, Florida, its home field, after 3.5 months of duty in England. 13 of the 18 remaining who were killed were returning to their wives and families at MacDill Field. The plane had stopped in the Azores to refuel. It took off in early darkness and rain from Le Guin Air Base, faltered, and crashed into the sea 500 yards from shore. In Stockholm, the Nobel Prize for Literature was awarded by the Swedish Academy of Literature to T.S. Eliot, the one-time Boston bank clerk who became one of the world's most famous and least understood poets. A naturalized British citizen, he was honored for his remarkable achievements as a pioneer in the field of modern poetry. At the same time, the Academy of Science announced two Nobel Scientific Awards, the Physics Prize to British cosmic ray researcher Patrick M.S. Blackett, and the Chemistry Prize to Swedish professor Arne Tiselius.
Did you know that for every 10 degrees the temperature falls, the efficiency of your car's battery goes down nearly 10%? So, if your battery's in poor condition now, you're almost sure to have battery trouble some chilly morning soon. That's your tip to see your independent Richfield dealer for a free battery checkup right away. And if he discovers signs of trouble ahead, have him install a factory-fresh Goodyear battery. Buying a world-famous Goodyear at Richfield is the best deal ever, and here's why. You get a liberal trade-in allowance on your old battery. You get an ironclad guarantee on your powerful new Goodyear battery. And what's more, if you prefer credit, your Richfield dealer will be glad to have you say, charge it the easy pay way. There's no red tape, no delay, or burdensome carrying charge. Your easy pay plan can include other purchases for your car, too. Goodyear tires and nationally famous accessories that your Richfield dealer stocks. So, whatever your car needs, remember, you will get the best deal at Richfield.
Now for other news. In the West Coast maritime strike, the Independent Marine Firemen's Union offered to reopen negotiations with ship owners and waterfront employers because it said election results make pointless any further continuation of the strike. Later, Harry Bridges, head man of the CIO Longshoremen, said his union would make a bid to do likewise. It was expected the pledge of the Democratic Party to repeal the GOP-sponsored Taft-Hartley law would play a major role in such negotiations. As for the California oil strike, contracts to end the strike were signed by the CIO oil workers with Standard's El Segundo plant, the Tidewater Associated plant at Watson, Shell plants in 5 localities, and the Texas Company's plants in the Los Angeles Basin. La Jolla, a big wave knocked 16-year-old Tom Collins of Colorado Springs off the rocks at La Jolla Cove and swept him out to sea as members of his high school class looked on. Body of the young victim has not been recovered. Alvin Jake Powell, former New York Yankee baseball player, ended his life with a gun at police headquarters in Washington, D.C. The police report said the 39-year-old Powell had been arrested for passing a bad check at a Washington hotel. When another woman driver cut in front of her, Mrs. Joan Zeroni of Los Angeles lit out in hot pursuit, banged into the rear of the other car at 2 intersections, chased into a service station, and pursued it in a ring around the gasoline pumps until she crashed into a post. Booked on a charge of assault with a deadly weapon, Mrs. Zeroni declared, "Oh, I got so mad." The weatherman says Northern California will be clear tomorrow and Saturday, except for a few showers near the Oregon border tomorrow night or Saturday, rising daytime temperatures. Southern California, generally clear tonight and tomorrow, windy in the mountains and interior sections, and locally windy in coastal valleys tonight. Winds decreasing tomorrow over most sections.
And that's 30 for tonight, friends. Next edition of the Richfield Reporter at this same time tomorrow night. Remember, the pen is mightier. Just try signing a check with a sword. And don't forget, ask for Rich Lube Premium Motor Oil. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.